chapter 27. Book of Matthew, chapter 27. I'd like to read verses 33 through verse 50. When they were come unto a place called Golgotha, that is to say, a place of a skull, they gave him, that's Jesus, vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. And when he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. And they crucified him, and parted his garments, casting lots, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophet. They parted my garments among them, and opened my vesture, did they cast lots, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. And sitting down, they watched him there, and set up over his head this accusation, his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then were there two thieves crucified with him, one in the right hand and another on the left. And they that passed by reviled him, that is Jesus, wagging their heads, and saying, "Thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him, and the scribes and elders said, "He saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God." The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Some of them that stood there, when they had heard that, said, "This man calleth for Elias." And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar, and put it on a reed, and gave him to drink. The rest said, "Let be. Let us see whether Elias will come to save him." Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. What we've just read is a God-inspired record of Christ upon the cross. Prior to this, on the evening of the Passover in the Garden of Gethsemane, he was betrayed and arrested. We read in Matthew 26 and 56 that when that happened, all the disciples forsook him and fled. According to John 18 and verse 13, he was then led away to Annas. And from there, in John 18 and verse 24, he was sent bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest. From Matthew's account, we learn at this time Jesus stood before Caiaphas, the scribes, and the elders. And he was questioned by them and smitten by them. The next morning, Jesus was led away to Pilate and was questioned by him. And according to Mark, Luke, and John, it was at this juncture that Pilate discovered that Jesus belonged to Herod's jurisdiction. So he sent him to Herod, who also questioned him and found nothing worthy of death in him, and sent him back to Pilate. According to Luke chapter 23, verses 13 through 15, Pilate called together the chief priests and the rulers of the people. And he said unto them, neither I nor Herod have found anything worthy of death in this man. And in an attempt to appease the people, he offered to set Jesus free and to crucify Barabbas, a notorious criminal. But the people, of course, vehemently refused, crying, "Crucify him," referring to Jesus, "crucify him." Pilate then scourged Jesus, and he was turned over to the soldiers. We read that in Matthew 27, verses 27 through 31. And the soldiers platted or shoved a crown of thorns upon his head, one of the most vascular portions of the body. So there's Jesus. His head is embedded with a crown of thorns. His back has been torn, lacerated by the scourging. His face is bruised beyond human recognition. And upon that face is the spittle of sinful man. And he's being mocked. And he's led away to be crucified. And as they're making their way to the place of crucifixion, there are people in front of him. They're clearing the way. There are people beside him. There are people behind him. The people are very anxious for him to be crucified. So to speed up the process, they force a man by the name of Simon to carry his cross upon which Jesus would be crucified. And then we read in verse 33, and when they were come into a place called Golgotha. And it's from these words we want to take the thought of our message. About a year ago, we preached on the subject of Golgotha. Preached many messages here from this passage of Scripture. There's many things to be preached upon. You can preach upon the thieves. You can go on and on. We want to speak this morning of Jesus at Golgotha for me. Jesus at Golgotha for me. The first thing we want to do is consider this place, Golgotha. They were come unto a place called Golgotha. Matthew's account, and when they were come into a place called Golgotha, that is a place of a skull. Mark writes in his account in Mark 15:22, and they bring him unto the place of Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of a skull. John writes in John 19:17, and he, Simon, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is in the Hebrew Golgotha. Luke writes in Luke 23:33, and when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, which, by the way, is Latin for Golgotha. We hear much about Jesus and Calvary. We hear little about Jesus and Golgotha. They're the same place. But three times we read the word Golgotha. Once we read the word Calvary in Luke's account, referring to the same place. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all mention this place, Golgotha. Luke refers to it in the Latin, Calvary. It was a small, elevated, rocky knoll. And we know from Hebrews 13 and verse 12 that it was outside the walls of Jerusalem. We gather from John 19, verses 41 and 42. Now, right next to it was a burial ground, a cemetery, if you will. This place called Golgotha was the place where the Romans put guilty criminals to death by crucifixion. It was a place where guilty criminals would meet their fate. So Golgotha was the place where the demands and consequences of a broken law were carried out. Golgotha was a place where final judgment was carried out upon the very worst of humanity. Golgotha was a place of the ultimate punishment, a place designated by suffering, a place of torture. Crucifixion was torture. Golgotha was a place of torture. It was a place of unspeakable pain, a place of unimaginable misery, a place of overwhelming sorrow and heartbreak, the place of execution. Golgotha was the place of condemnation. I mean, if you were led to Golgotha, your death was sure. And it would be an agonizing death. Golgotha was a place of great humiliation. It's a place of indignity. A place of disgrace. Everyone who died at Golgotha was viewed upon as a disgrace to society. Golgotha would have been a place that would have struck the hearts of men with dread and fear. It was a horrid place. It was an appalling and abominable place. And thousands and thousands and thousands of times, the Romans would parade the guilty out of the city unto this place called Golgotha. I mean, think of the character of the people who had been brought to this place, Golgotha. Think of the acts that they had committed that were brought to this place. Think of the life that they had lived, the people who were brought to this place. Think of the stories that could be told about the place called Golgotha. But the greatest, the most amazing, the most mystifying and memorable story that can be told about this place called Golgotha is the day that Jesus was brought to a place called Golgotha. Secondly, we want to consider that Jesus went to this terrible place called Golgotha. Jesus, God in a fleshly body, God in a body like yours and mine, went to a place called Golgotha. Jesus, the perfectly pure one, He who was holy, He who was harmless, undefiled, without fault, without sin, went to a place called Golgotha. Jesus, the innocent one, is brought to this place called Golgotha. The very place where the most filthy, the most wicked, the most vile and foul and repulsive of mankind had been brought. There is Jesus, God in the flesh. And He's brought to Golgotha. And there He is at Golgotha. Jesus, the one who went about doing good, healing the sick, giving sight to the blind, giving hearing to the deaf, giving strength to the crippled, giving cleansing to the defiled, setting at liberty those who had been possessed of demons, and even giving life to the dead. And here He is at a place for the most wicked of men. A place called Golgotha. Jesus, The one who did no wrong to anyone. The one who brought more cheer and more hope and more relief to mankind than anyone who has ever lived is brought to this place where the most wicked and the most vile of humanity is brought. Jesus, whose life was love, is brought to this place where the most violent of men have been brought. Jesus, who never spoke an untruth, is brought to a place where the most dishonest of men have been brought, where thieves and murders have been brought. As we read verse 33, "And when they were come unto a place called Golgotha," we need to stop and we need to behold Jesus at Golgotha. We see Him there at Golgotha. We need to see Him there. We need to see Him there. Then we need to remember, unlike all the rest who had ever been brought to Golgotha, He's there willingly. He's there readily. He's there with a purpose. And last but not least, He's there gladly. No one had ever been brought to Golgotha that was glad. But Jesus is there. He's there gladly. Now consider what happened, what transpired at this place called Golgotha. How many thousands had been brought down this road? How many thousands of people had been paraded down this road leading to this place called Golgotha? The countless individuals who had been forced down that road. The countless individuals who went down that road kicking and screaming, resisting their accusers. Wicked, vile, and wretched individuals had walked this road to this place called Golgotha. And I imagine that many who were led down that road pleaded for their lives. I imagine that there were some who claimed their innocence all the way down that road. And I'm sure there were others who cursed their accusers and cursed everyone who was in the crowd. You think about the dread and the fear of all the ones who had ever walked this road. But this day, things would be different. Jesus, as He heads to the place called Golgotha, you look at Him. There's no apprehension whatsoever. There's no fear. There's no panic. He's different. He's different than all who have ever walked this road before. Notice verse 34. They gave Him vinegar to drink mingled with gall. When He had tasted thereof, He would not drink. This was a narcotic mixture. It was created by the women who felt sorry for those who were being crucified at Golgotha. They were trying to make it more humane. It was designed for the condemned one's comfort. I believe it was also designed for the soldiers' convenience in fighting the resistance of the condemned criminal. But when Jesus is offered this mind-numbing drink, he refuses it. For he would suffer the full measure of punishment. He would not drink. Here at the place called Golgotha, we read in verse 35, and they crucified him. Notice that the account moves from the offer of a narcotic drink to they crucified him. It is as if we are bidden to turn our eyes away for a moment. And the next thing we see is Jesus upon the cross. Between verses 34 and 35, the cross was taken from Simon, laid upon the ground, and Jesus was nailed to that cross. And Jesus and the cross is then lifted from the ground. The ligaments and the bones of the wrist supporting the weight of the body. The pain would have been excruciating. And the cross is then thrust into the ground, hitting bottom. And when it did, it pulled all the bones out of joint. We need to stop and behold Jesus at Golgotha. Can you see him there? Can you see Jesus at Golgotha? If you look, there are three crosses. There were three men crucified that day. There's one on the left. There's one on the right. And upon those two crosses are the usual criminals. But there's also a cross in the middle. And as you read verses 39 through 43, you see that everyone's attention is focused upon that middle cross. It's as if they didn't even see the other two crosses. In reading verses 39 through 43, you see the one upon that center cross. He's far more despised, far more hated, far more shunned than the two guilty thieves upon the other two crosses. The one upon that center cross, he's more mocked. He's more taunted. He's more ridiculed than the two thieves and the other two crosses. There's far more scorn for the one upon that center cross. There's far more disgust and hostility and animosity shown to that one on that center cross than the two selfish thieves on the other two crosses. The one upon that center cross, without a doubt, was considered to be far, far worse than the two thieves. He was considered to be more intolerable than the two thieves. There were those who were sitting and standing there, and there were those who were passing by, and they all mocking the one on that center cross. Not only the ones sitting there, not only the ones standing there, not only the ones that passed by, but we read the thieves also were mocking the one upon that center cross. One upon that center cross. If you look at him, he has bruises that the others do not have. His body is far more mangled than the two thieves. His suffering is far more intense. The inscription upon this central cross is quite different. You see, the Romans would put above the cross what crime the condemned were guilty of. And it wasn't the usual inscription, such as thieves and murderers. But read verse 37. The inscription upon this cross was, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." As soon as you see that inscription, "This is Jesus," we need to stop. And we need to behold the one upon that center cross. He is despised. He is rejected. He is stricken. He is smitten. He is afflicted. He's wounded. He's bruised. He's chastised. And he's in travail of soul. Let the words of the inscription sink deep into our hearts. This is Jesus. Who is Jesus? He is God. He is God in a body of flesh. This is Jesus. I believe, you can believe what you want to, but I believe that many people who walked by that day and saw that inscription, "This is Jesus," they never got that out of their mind. It was very common to see thief, but never before was this inscription written. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. And just as the common inscription, such as thief or murderer, would describe the character and acts of those being crucified, so it is with this inscription, "This is Jesus." It describes his being. It describes his character. It describes his attributes. It describes the power of the one upon that central cross. The inscription, "This is Jesus," is descriptive of his very reason for existence. "Thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he shall save his people from their sins." We need to take a good look at that inscription. "This is Jesus." And remember, there he is at Golgotha. But he has broken no law. Yet he is in this horrific place called Golgotha. A place for the guilty and condemned criminal. A place where the consequences of broken law were met. A place of suffering, torture, misery, and death. And there he is in this place. He has broken no law. So we must ask, why? Why is Jesus at this place called Golgotha? I'm glad you asked. We want to look at that. Why? Why was Jesus at this place? Again, the one upon that central cross is in this horrible place called Golgotha. He has committed no sin. He has never done the slightest wrong to any man, woman, or child. He's absolutely perfect. He's God. So why? Why is he in this place called Golgotha? I believe that Jesus left the glories and splendor and the riches of heaven to specifically go to this place called Golgotha. I believe that his earthly life, from conception to his arrest and trial, was designed by God to bring him to this place called Golgotha. As you behold him there, in that place of punishment, in that place of suffering and torture, in that place of humility and disgrace and condemnation, he is there willingly. He is there voluntarily. In other words, he is there because he wants to be. This is mystifying. No one ever goes to Golgotha because they want to be there. But Jesus is there in all the agony because he wants to be. This is mystifying to the passerbys. This one named Jesus, there he is at Golgotha. Again, he has done no wrong. Yet he's dying the death of a criminal. He is treated as if he were the worst of all criminals. He is treated as if he were the worst of any criminal that ever lived. Looking at the cross on the left and the one on the right, you immediately know why these men were being crucified. They are thieves. No one asks, why are they there? We know why they're there. They're thieves. Meeting the just demands of the law. But looking at that central cross, for those who would pass by that day, all they read is, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. And the passerby might ask, why? Why is he there? Why is he in this place of suffering and anguish? The answer is, he's there as God's representative. He's there out of love for others. He's there in the place and in the stead of others. Unbeknownst to all those who pass by, unbeknownst to all those who sat there and stood there that day, he was there for me. None of them knew that, but that's truth. He was there for me. You see, the reason that this one named Jesus is in this place called Golgotha, dying upon a cross, is because he took upon himself every single one of my sins. He took upon himself all the vileness and all the filth of those sins. Took upon himself all the guilt of those sins. He took upon himself all the debt of those sins. The entire load was upon him. And he voluntarily and willingly and on purpose went to this place called Golgotha. He did so for me. He did so in my place. And for me, and in my place instead, he was made a curse. And for me and in my place instead, he was considered the worst of criminals. Jesus, with my sin, went voluntarily, went willingly and on purpose, with a heart of love for me, to this place called Golgotha. And there, for me, in my place and in my stead, he endured distress, pain, and misery, and anguish, and torment that is beyond words. No one can describe what Jesus went through at Golgotha. In a place called Golgotha, Jesus for me and my place instead was in travail of soul. And as bad as the physical suffering was, it could not compare to the travail of soul that he was in. There at Golgotha, the Bible teaches that he made his soul an offering for sin. You see, crucifixion was not enough. He made his soul an offering for sin. There at Golgotha, Jesus, God himself, received what my sins deserve at the hand of God. Is it any wonder that people were repulsed as they looked upon that one upon that center cross? What's so repulsing about him? He has all of our sins upon him. It's repulsive. And there he is, receiving at the hand of God what our sins deserve, what we deserve as sinners. There at Golgotha, Jesus teaches in John chapter 10 that no man took his life from him, but he laid it down for himself. He told his disciples, there is no greater love than a man lay down his life for his friends. Jesus laid down his life not for his friends, but for his enemies. He went there willingly for his enemies, for I was at enmity with God. He's not there for his friends. He's there for his enemies. No greater love than a man lay down his life for his friends. Oh, what about when a man lays down his life for his enemies? He's paying a sin debt as you look at him at Golgotha. He's paying a sin debt that we cannot pay. You're here today, and without Jesus Christ, there's never been a time in your life when you've received Jesus Christ as your Savior. I must tell you today that you are a sinner, that you are guilty before God, and you have a debt that you can never pay. You say, well, I'm trying my best. Keep on trying. You'll never pay it. You know, the thing about debt, the laws of the land, after a certain amount of time, a debt is forgiven. No time will it forgive this debt. No time will it forgive this debt. You may eventually accumulate enough money to pay off your debt. You'll never accumulate enough righteousness to pay off the debt of one single sin. And we're not talking about the debt of a single sin. We're talking about a debt of a lifetime. of sin. But I'm glad today that the story does not end at Golgotha. You see, the story does not end in death. Remember, we said there was a burying ground nearby, according to the book of John. The body of Jesus would eventually be taken from that cross. And that body would be removed from Golgotha. And it would be placed in a tomb. And after 3 days and three nights, Jesus, the very one who died at Golgotha, Jesus rose from the dead, rose from the grave. And he did so for those he went to Golgotha for. And now he forever lives for the very ones that he went to Golgotha for. So if you're here and unsaved, oh, I pray that you could see and feel yourself as a guilty sinner before a holy God. This is more than admitting I'm a sinner. This is seeing yourself as a filthy, wretched sinner. This is feeling yourself a sinner. It is feeling the weight and the filth of your sin. If you can feel that today, that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. Because it won't end there. The Lord will not bring you to that point and leave you. Seeing and feeling yourself as a guilty sinner before God, you need to see by faith Jesus at Golgotha. And he's there for you. And he's there in your place. See by faith when they took the body of Jesus, the fleshly body that God himself dwelt in. They took it from the cross and they laid it in that tomb and then look beyond 3 days and three nights and see Jesus coming victoriously from death and the grave, and he did so for you. Can you trust him? You see yourself as a sinner. You feel the guilt and the filth and the weight of your sin. Can you see Jesus at Golgotha paying your sin debt? Can you see Jesus coming up out of the grave, winning the victory for you? And I ask you today, can you trust him? Can you trust him with your soul? Can you trust him with your soul? That means you're not going to trust in doing the best you can. You're not going to trust in Home Baptist Church. You're not going to trust in baptism. You're going to put all your trust. You're going to put everything in the death and the merits and in the person of Jesus Christ. That's salvation. And that's why Jesus said, I am the way. Oh, thank God that one day Jesus went to the place called Golgotha. I'm placing my eternity believing that he went there for me in my place and in my stead. If you can see and feel yourself as a guilty sinner today, can you trust him? Can you just trust Jesus? What he did at Golgotha. What he did in coming from that tomb. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us. Verse song. Let's all stand.